Lila extended her hand and shook mine, quite formally. The contrast between the two women was enormous in every way. In terms of age and looks, obviously, but also in terms of energy, vivacity, manners, and disposition. I settled in, and Lila got straight to the point. She asked, "Did you bring the memory stick?" I said, "No," although I had. It was in my pocket, with my toothbrush and Leonin's phone.
"Where is it?"
"Somewhere else. Somewhere safe?" "Completely." She asked,
"Why did those men come here?"
"Because you're poking around in something that's still a secret."
"But the press officer at the Human Resources Command was enthusiastic about it."
"That's because you lied to him."
"I'm sorry?"
"You told him it was about Berlin. But it wasn't. Berlin in 1983 was no kind of fun, but it was stable. It was a Cold War tableau frozen in time. Maybe there was a little back and forth between the CIA and the KGB and the Brits and the Stasi, but there was no real U.S. Army involvement. For our guys, it was just a tourist destination. Take the train, see the wall. Great bars and great hookers. Probably 10,000 guys called John passed through, but they didn't do anything except spend money and catch the clap. Certainly, they didn't fight, and they didn't win medals. So tracking one of them down would be next to impossible. Maybe HRC was prepared to waste a little time, just in case something good came of it. But from the beginning it was a ridiculous task. So you can't have gotten a positive outcome from Susan Mark. She can't have told you anything about Berlin that made it worth coming over here. Just not possible."
"So why did we come?"
"Because during those first few phone calls you softened her up, and you made her your friend, and then when you judged the time was right, you told her what you really wanted, and exactly how to find it. For her ears only. Not Berlin. Something else entirely." An unguarded person with nothing to hide would have responded instantly and openly, probably with outrage, possibly with hurt feelings. An amateur bluffer would have faked it, with bluster and noise. Lila Hoth just sat quiet for a beat. Her eyes showed the same kind of fast response as John Sansom's had back in his room in the O. Henry Hotel. "Rethink. Redeploy, reorganize, all in a brief couple of seconds." She said,
"It's very complicated."
I didn't answer.
"But it's entirely innocent."
I said, "Tell that to Susan Mark." She inclined her head, the same gesture I had seen before, courteous, delicate, and a little contrite. She said,
"I asked Susan for help. She agreed, quite willingly. Clearly her actions created difficulties for her with other parties, so yes, I suppose I was the indirect cause of her troubles, but not the direct cause, and I regret what happened. Very, very much. Please believe me, if I had known beforehand, I would have said no to my mother."
Svetlana Hoth nodded and smiled. I said, "What other parties?" Lila Hoth said,
"Her own government, I think. Your government."
"Why? What did your mother really want?" Lila said she needed to explain the background first. Chapter 36. Lila Hoth had been just 7 years old when the Soviet Union had fallen apart, so she spoke with a kind of historical detachment. She had the same kind of distance from former realities that I had from the Jim Crow years in America. She told me that the Red Army had deployed political commissars very widely. Every infantry company had one. She said that command and discipline were shared uneasily between the commissar and the field officer. She said that rivalry was common and bitter, not necessarily between the two as individuals, but between tactical common sense and ideological purity. She made sure I understood the general background, and then she moved on to specifics. Svetlana Hoff had been a political commissar assigned to an infantry company. Her company had gone to Afghanistan soon after the Soviet invasion of 1979. Initial combat operations had been satisfactory for the infantry. Then they had turned disastrous. Attritional losses had become heavy and constant. At first there had been denial. Then Moscow had reacted belatedly. The order of battle had been reorganized. Companies had been merged. Tactical common sense had suggested retrenchment. Ideology had required renewed offensives. Morale had required unity of ethnicity and geographical origin. Companies had been reconstituted to include sniper teams. Expert marksmen were brought in with their companion spotters. Thus, pairs of ragged men used to living off the land had arrived. Svetlana's sniper was her husband. His spotter was Svetlana's younger brother. The situation had improved, both in military and in personal terms. Svetlana's and other family and regional groupings had spent downtime together very happily. Companies had dug in and settled down and achieved acceptable safety and security. Offensive requirements were satisfied by regular nighttime sniper operations. The results were excellent. Soviet snipers had long been the best in the world. The Afghan Mujahideen had no answer to them. Late in 1981, Moscow had reinforced a winning hand by shipping new weapons. A new model rifle had been issued. It was recently developed and still top secret. It was called the Val Silent Sniper. I nodded, said, "I saw one once." Lila Hoth smiled, briefly, with a hint of shyness, and with a hint of national pride, perhaps, for a country that no longer existed. Probably just a shadow of the pride her mother had felt way back when, because the Val was a great weapon. It was a very accurate, silenced, semi-automatic rifle. It fired a heavy 9mm bullet at a subsonic velocity, and could defeat all types of contemporary body armor and thin-skinned military vehicles at ranges out to about 400 yards. It came with a choice of powerful day telescopes or electronic night scopes. It was a nightmare from an opponent's point of view. You could be killed with no warning at all. Silently, suddenly, and randomly, asleep in bed in a tent, in the latrines, eating, dressing, walking around in the light, in the dark, I said, it was a fine piece.